Chapter 3. So, on the following evening, we again assembled to discuss and arrange our plans. Harris said, "Now the first thing to settle is what to take with us. Now you get a bit of paper and write down, Jay, and you get the grocery catalogue, George, and somebody give me a bit of pencil, and then I'll make out a list." That's Harris all over. So ready to take the burden of everything himself and put it on the backs of other people. I said I could not permit him to take so much labour upon himself. I said, "No, you get the paper and the pencil and the catalogue, and George write down, and I'll do the work." The first list we made out had to be discarded. It was clear that the upper reaches of the Thames would not allow of the navigation of a boat sufficiently large to take the things we had set down as indispensable. So we tore the list up and looked at one another. George said, "You know, we're on the wrong track altogether. We must not think of the things we could do with, but only of the things that we can't do without." George comes out really quite sensible at times. You'd be surprised. I call that downright wisdom, not merely as regards the present case, but with reference to our trip up the river of life generally. How many people on that voyage load up the boat till it is ever in danger of swamping with a store of foolish things which they think essential to the pleasure and comfort of the trip, but which are really only useless lumber? How they pile the poor little craft mast high with fine clothes and big houses, with useless servants, and a host of swell friends that do not care tuppence for them, and that they do not care three halfpence for, with expensive entertainments that nobody enjoys, with formalities and fashions, with pretense and ostentation, and with, oh, heaviest, maddest lumber of all, the dread of what will my neighbour think, with luxuries that only cloy, with pleasures that bore, with empty show, that like the criminal's iron crown of yore, makes to bleed and swoon the aching head that wears it. It is lumber, man, all lumber, throw it overboard. It makes the boat so heavy to pull, you nearly faint at the oars. It makes it so cumbersome and dangerous to manage. You never know a moment's freedom from anxiety and care, never gain a moment's rest for dreamy laziness. No time to watch the windy shadows skimming lightly o'er the shallows, or the glittering sunbeams flitting in and out among the ripples, or the great trees by the margin looking down at their own image, or the woods all green and golden, or the lilies white and yellow, or the sombre waving rushes, or the sedges, or the orchids, or the blue forget-me-nots. Throw the lumber over, man. Let your boat of life be light, packed with only what you need. A homely home and simple pleasures, one or two friends, worth the name, someone to love and someone to love you, a cat, a dog, and a pipe or two, enough to eat and enough to wear, and a little more than enough to drink, for thirst is a dangerous thing. You will find the boat easier to pull then, and it would not be so liable to upset, and it would not matter so much if it does upset. Good plain merchandise will stand water. You will have time to think as well as to work, time to drink in life's sunshine, time to listen to the aeolian music that the wind of God draws from the human heartstrings around us. Time to... I beg your pardon, really. I quite forgot. Well, we left the list to George, and he began it. "We won't take a tent," suggested George. "We will have a boat with a cover. It is ever so much simpler and more comfortable." It seemed a good thought, and we adopted it. I don't know whether you have ever seen the thing I mean. You fix iron hoops up over the boat and stretch a huge canvas over them, and fasten it down all round from stem to stern, and it converts the boat into a sort of little house. It is beautifully cosy, though a trifle stuffy, but there everything has its drawbacks, as the man said when his mother-in-law died and they came down upon him for the funeral expenses. George said that in that case we must take a rug each, a lamp, some soap, a brush and comb between us, a toothbrush each, a basin, some tooth powder, some shaving tackle. Sounds like a French exercise, doesn't it? And a couple of big towels for bathing. I notice that people always make gigantic arrangements for bathing when they're going anywhere near the water, but they don't bathe much when they're there. In the present instance, we all talked as if we were going to have a long swim every morning. George said it was so pleasant to wake up in a boat in the fresh morning and plunge into the limpid river. Harris said there was nothing like a swim before breakfast to give you an appetite. He said it always gave him an appetite. George said that if he was going to make Harris eat more than Harris ordinarily ate, then he should protest against Harris having a bath at all. He said there would be quite enough hard work in towing sufficient food for Harris up against stream as it was. I urged upon George, however, how much pleasanter it would be to have Harris clean and fresh about the boat, even if we did have to take a few more hundredweight of provisions, and he got to see it in my light and withdrew his opposition to Harris's bath. Agreed finally that we should take 3 bath towels, so as not to keep each other waiting. For clothes, George said 2 suits of flannel would be sufficient, as we could wash them ourselves in the river when they got dirty. We asked him if he'd ever tried washing flannels in the river, and he replied, no, not exactly himself-like, but he knew some fellows who had, and it was easy enough. And Harris and I were weak enough to fancy he knew what he was talking about, and that 3 respectable young men without position or influence, and with no experience in washing, could really clean their own shirts and trousers in the River Thames with a bit of soap. We were to learn in the days to come, when it was too late, that George was a miserable impostor, who could evidently have known nothing whatever about the matter. If you'd seen these clothes after, but as the shilling shockers say, we anticipate. George impressed upon us to take a change of underthings and plenty of socks in case we got upset and wanted to change. Also plenty of handkerchiefs, as they would do to wipe things, and a pair of leather boots as well as our boating shoes, as we should want them if we got upset.